From the Credit Union National Association, this is the CUNA News Podcast. Credit Union People, Credit Union Ideas.
Welcome to the CUNA News Podcast. I'm Bill Merrick, Deputy Editor at CUNA. This week's episode looks at the many ways credit unions improve members' financial well-being, from credit counseling to financial literacy initiatives to increasing access to affordable housing. We talked to Carrie Iafrady, CEO at Members First Credit Union in Midland, Michigan, Susan Espinoza, Vice President of Member Experience at Skyla Federal Credit Union in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Nicole Harper, Director of Corporate Strategy at Jack Henry. So clearly, financial health of your members is a big focus for your credit unions. Susan, can you maybe start us off? Why is that such a big priority for your credit union?
Well, we are number one, a low-income designated credit union. And we actually began, goodness, I guess about 57, 58 years ago now, with the intent of helping city workers who were having to go to loan sharks, essentially, to get loans, to get their paychecks cashed. They were having to use services that were very expensive, and they could not get banking anywhere else. So we started a long, long time ago with that in mind, and we've just kind of kept that mission. And so we, as a matter of fact, our mission statement is building financial freedom for all. And so we've been very intentional about going into places where other people don't necessarily want to put branches, trying to really help the underserved, you know, creating programs, credit counseling services and that type of thing that can provide that financial literacy piece. So this is near and dear to us, and that's not something that's ever going to change. You know, obviously, as we've grown and we've expanded our products and services, and we have people who are, you know, have more means as members as well now, the mission remains the same. And so anyway, it's just part of our DNA. And as such, it's something that's always a critical piece of our strategy.
How about you, Carrie?
You know, it's a really important responsibility of us as credit unions to be that financial pillar in all of the communities that we're in, and be able to create those thriving communities, just as Susan was saying as well, that's our role. We also are a low-income designated credit union and a CDFI organization as well. And as she was speaking to, in order to qualify for that, it means that you're serving those who are underserved or unbanked. And It's very important to us to, you know, take on that responsibility wholly and be that for our members and our communities.
What does that designation allow you to do that maybe other financial institutions can't?
First of all, it gives us access to a lot of grant money. The CDFI program, their mission is to ensure that financial institutions can really dive into their markets and communities where people are underserved and unbanked. And so it's given us quite a bit of grant money over the years to invest in products and services that will serve those members, that will allow us to take the risk on them as well.
And where do you see members struggling most from a financial health perspective?
Well, for us, I think, you know, they're very sensitive to economic factors. So right now, with rising interest rates and certainly the inflation, they are paycheck to paycheck. Most of your underserved communities barely make it. And so those increases in their day-to-day cost of living makes a real impact, and they start having to make decisions they don't want to make. And so that's the time where we can step in and try to provide those lower income or lower interest products. We can also partner with other members of the community to provide lower cost loans, to provide savings initiatives. And they just really need more guidance during these times because, you know, as it is, one emergency cost throws them off of their budget, their balance. And then when you add the day-to-day cost of living that is increasing without the same increase in their salaries, it's very difficult and they need that extra support.
Yeah, it's so hard to get back on track after you're thrown off.
It is. And we are very cognizant of that. We are always trying to see how can we help through these times. And a lot of times that's just having those conversations in the offices or through our credit counseling, but even just our regular member service advisors taking a look at their finances and seeing how we can help them, whether it's save money, whether we can provide a little bit of guidance and insight in their budgeting. And so it's just that higher level of support that credit unions provide that make it a little easier when the economy is tough.
Any thoughts on that, Carrie, about where your members tend to struggle most?
Sure. We're seeing the same, Susan, the same. You know, one of our big initiatives this year is just to help our members get that $400 savings account going, just that little bit of buffer money, you know, as we were just talking about that. Hopefully, as they come into an expense or something that would throw them off their budget, maybe that would help. So that's one of our new initiatives this year, is to really work with our members in that capacity as well. And behind that, as Susan was saying, we've really taken advantage of the FICEP program provided by CUNA. So all of our team members, all 250 team members, are getting FICEP certified so that we can really be helping our members talk through each situation. They don't even know sometimes how to help themselves, and that's what we need to be here for.
So Susan, you kicked us off, you know, sharing that it's part of financial health and the issue is part of your DNA. It's part of our DNA as well. So Jack Henry's purpose and mission, we're really about empowering people and communities to gain financial freedom to move forward, whatever their forward is. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to aim to strengthen connections between people and their financial institutions. And how we do that's a little bit different because we're not a credit union, but we deliver technology and services all aimed at helping to reduce barriers to financial health. And so my role, I'm director of corporate strategy, and I lead a research team. And we just recently unveiled some research findings from our strategic priorities benchmark study. This study did survey 118 CEOs, and among which were 62 were credit union CEOs, and financial health ranked among the top three types of fintech solutions that credit unions and banks, for that matter, are looking to embed in their digital banking experience. So the strategic importance is flying very high and the need is very real. So it's a very exciting time to be nurturing this ecosystem as we're talking about today.
Why do you think this has become such a huge priority for, looks like, the whole financial services industry? Credit unions have always looked after the financial well-being of their members, but it seems like there's just an increased focus these days. Any thoughts on that?
I think that the need is real. So we have some data from the Financial Health Network. For the listeners that may not be aware, every year they do a pulse research study. They call it Financial Health Pulse Research. They found that financial health declined for the first time in the study's five-year history. So the need is very real. And a statistic that, you know, we're all kind of rallying around trying to drive improvement to is that only 31% of U.S. Americans are financially healthy. So that represents a really strong need that we can all, in our own way, you know, drive improvement in.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Nicole on that. And, you know, I think the younger generations are experiencing financial pressure that we didn't necessarily. We all know that wages have not kept up historically over the past few decades with the cost of living. So there is a good bit of financial pressure and people don't have the guidance they need and they don't know how to manage it. So I think that that's why that it's become a focal point for a lot of institutions.
We speak to the fact that, you know, 6 or 7 out of 10 of our members are living paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. and our team members possibly as well. And so, again, taking on that responsibility to be the ones who can help them through these situations and actually come out of it and become a thriving family of our community as well.
So, Carrie and Susan, can you talk a little bit about some of your successful efforts to improve members' financial health? And Nicole, maybe you could comment on what you see some of your clients doing that's been working.
Sure. So, as I already mentioned, you know, I think the first step for us was really starting with our team members. You can do a lot of marketing campaigns and invite your members to financial webinars and, you know, evenings out. But if the team members can't be helping them, that's where you really need to start. So we started with that FICEP certification, and then they created a community. So we have a FICEP community at our credit union that our team members belong to share ideas on how they're helping their members. It's just like another club, like a book club or a golf club. It's a FICEP club so that those who are excited about helping members are gathering together to share ideas and help each other. One of the other things that we just did recently this year too was to lead our entire team through a poverty simulation with our local United Way. And so they could really dive deep for a good half day. And if they're not already in that situation, what that does feel like for our members and that pressure and the stress they're going through on a daily basis. And so, you know, really elevating and skilling our team up was our first priority. And then they could dive into helping our members even more. So yeah, we hear stories every day, member impact stories. We try gathering those and sharing those within the organization and then out loud into our communities as well, so that people do really understand the impact. I mean, it can be as simple as helping someone just start to even think about a budget or take a look at where they're spending, you know, on a daily, regular basis and those needs versus wants. One of the stories that came across this past week in our all-employee call every Wednesday was a team member who really helped by just taking a look at where that member was spending money. They really put some effort in place over the last 3 months, and that member was able to raise their credit score by 100 points in order to get that auto loan that they were looking to get from us. And those happen every single day with us. Susan, I'm sure you have some too.
Well, absolutely. And I love those kinds of stories, by the way. They make me happy. But so we have kind of done a couple of things. Obviously, we have our internal programs. We have our credit counseling program, which does exactly that. And that is a more intense look at someone's financial situation. So I'm a certified financial counselor. And what we do is we, you know, develop, first of all, we do a cash flow assessment and analysis and see, okay, do you have more coming in or going out? And it's pretty much always going out. And then having that second set of eyes to take a look at their budget with them and say, okay, what differences can you make? And we never tell them what to do. We provide them with kind of just some options and let them make those decisions and really take control of their finances. And we've had some magnificent success stories. I mean, from my biggest success story was one who came to me, and she had a very low credit score, so much debt. She was having collection calls at work every day. She said she couldn't sleep. She was losing her hair. And we worked together very closely for about a year. And she was super invested in the program as well. And we looked through all of her options. She chose what she felt like were manageable options for her. And she ended up being, she owns her own house now. She's got an 800 credit score. She was able to finance a car. She completely turned her finances around. And you saw a difference even in her countenance and just her appearance. You know, it was like a huge weight had been lifted off of her. And she's just one of those tremendous success stories. But even beyond that, you have those smaller success stories. And even making a small difference in a member's life can have a fairly big impact over time. But we've also partnered with some community organizations. And really, our primary and most successful partnership has been with Commonwealth. And Commonwealth, it was kind of the brainchild of a man named Darren Ash, who decided that he really wanted to take that extra step to serve the underbanked and the unbanked and people who had no good finance options. You know, they were going to the payday lenders and that type of thing. So we open these accounts for them. They go to a lot of shelters, women's groups, women's homes, and that type of thing, and people that just don't really have a lot of financial access. So we open them, we do our financial reporting for them. They provide very low cost or no cost loans. We also help them with what they call their Generation 2080, and that is enticing a member to save $20 of each paycheck. And at the end of each year, for 2 years, Commonwealth matches that money that they have put into savings. We keep a record of that. We report that to them and so forth, so that at the end of 2 years, they've got about $2,000 in savings. And so these programs, you know, we can do more together with community partners than we can even by ourselves. So it's really trying to have those internal programs and products and services in tandem with what we can do in the community with our partners.
So in hearing Carrie and Susan, as we're trying to map what are we seeing as a technology solution provider at an ecosystem level, what credit unions are doing, these two ladies showed fantastic examples of really what we're seeing. And it's really the objective of credit unions becoming that epicenter or financial hub for their members. Mm-hmm. We think about, let's take an example of digital banking. You know, imagine the number of apps we have on our phone that are solving little point solutions solutions of helping us manage our finances, let alone the number of, you know, of brands that we do business with. So that creates a lot of complexity. It's really, really hard to understand, you know, 360 what your finances look like. Therefore, how do you better manage it, right? So I think we see credit unions really stepping up, trying to become the epicenter in the financial hub in a digital first context, right? So use of APIs, allowing their members to connect external accounts into the credit union's digital banking experience to get that 360 view. It not only benefits members, you know, reducing friction and becoming more seamless in the experience, it helps credit unions too, because they have access now to data to understand their members' state of financial health and deliver up right contextual, right time messaging and solutions. And I think too, it's about offering the right tools. And if you think of credit unions, you know, they have such a responsibility of serving such a broad variety of demographics, of markets, of really different states of financial health. So we see credit unions focusing on solutions that are mapped to pillars around spending, borrowing, planning, and even protecting. If we think too, it might be something to a call to action to remember that fraudsters, you know, are looking after your members and trying to, you know, really, you know, take their finances, account takeover. We've got vulnerable populations, you know, with aging members. So I think, you know, protecting them is another pillar that's really rooted in financial health. So we see credit unions really, really, you know, trying to engage. So our role as Jack Henry is how do we map and become the matchmaker of the appropriate fintech solutions that map to those pillars and really create an easy opportunity through open APIs or our own developed solutions to deliver on that.
So Carrie and Susan, what role does technology play in your efforts to improve members' financial health?
So it's extremely important, right, that we have to meet our members where they're at. And sometimes we never see them face to face. So how do we interact with them through those channels that Jack Henry and our online banking providers can provide us? To the point that Nicole was just talking about, you know, on the fraud side and ensuring that members know very quickly when they can't spare a couple hundred dollars of a fraud mistake or an issue, if their card is compromised, it's important that we're offering those solutions to them where they're at. So enrolling them in text messaging and email fraud alerts, also offering products like CardSwap where they can quickly switch to their new card and move all of their accounts over so that we can minimize the money loss to the member. That's where the technology is helping us the most, as well as Nicole pointed out, the idea of ensuring that the member can have a broad look of their entire financial picture all at once through CFPM platforms, Savvy Money platforms that are showing their credit score and opportunities to the member as they're doing that hard work of working with us and growing their credit score. So technology is key to us in delivering that information to them where they're at and when they need to be at, because they're usually taking care of a family or parents or working very hard. And so they can't always be in front of us, but we need to always be in front of them.
Absolutely. And so I agree, it's increased our reach. And we, even with our credit counseling, we do most of that digitally now because people, they struggle to be able to come and meet. But we also can provide a lot of flexibility. And one of the things that I love about Jack Henry is that it is customizable. And so that has allowed us to be very agile in our product servings. And so that we can go in and we can write to very specific products for those low-income needs. And like, for instance, Commonwealth, you know, they require a lot of reporting that we just did not have already with our internal products. And we were able to go in and create different product types for them. We were able to go in and create different types of reporting. So the customizable aspect of the core system has been pivotal as far as being able to do what we want to do in a timely fashion and exactly the way that we want to do it. So not only do we have the reach, but we also have a lot more scope. We are able to do more.
So looking at the partnerships that you've formed, how do you decide which organizations to partner with and which programs to embrace?
Well, you have to do your research, obviously. And you know, if you get that reputation in the community, people will come to you. because they know that you like working with the community partnerships. And they have not all been successful. We had one kind of early on that was not successful. And that one was a great lesson. You know, we learned from it. You learn and you use that to apply to the next one. But you do have to have a lot of vetting and due diligence to make sure that what they're trying to do works on paper. And you know, sometimes the heart can be bigger than the brain. And I don't, you know, want to say it like that, but essentially you want to do more than is actually feasible. And you have to be realistic. You're going to have a degree of failure with these with regard to losses. You know, not everyone is going to be able to step up and, you know, improve their finances. Some are just going to walk away from these loans, whether they're low cost or not. They're not going to be able to manage it. They're not going to be able to maintain their accounts because they're so fragile. But that's okay, because as long as you have planned for that and you've got a reasonable expectation and realization of those losses, that's just kind of part of the cost of helping vulnerable populations. But you still do it within context of your overall strategy. And so you just have to have, like I said, due diligence, vetting, and then monitor and assess as you're going through it, because these are not the type of things where you just plug it in and go. You've got to constantly assess it. What's working, what's not working, make those tweaks, those revisions. And then if you find that you've gotten one that's just not working, you've got to know when to pull out.
Yeah, Susan's right. I would just add on that, you know, looking for that mission alignment is number one. So ensuring that missions align and that's mission-based worked in the same way that we are. And then also, because of the heightened work in ensuring financial well-being for all, there's plenty of opportunity to work with our organizations that we're used to. So CUNA is putting out a lot of programs, as well as the foundation. NCUA is DIFS here in Michigan is our governing body, the FDIC is with the banks. So there's plenty of organizations that we're already working with that can couple and make programs happen very quickly and allow for us to respond in a more quicker manner where we don't have to do as much due diligence and we can really get some things to our members more quickly. One of those for us is the Bank On Coalition that DIFS locally for us has partnered with. And that's ensuring that those members who are either completely underserved or non-banked at this point are getting the products and services that they need, you know, bringing down the barriers of that embarrassment related to coming into a financial institution where they don't even think that they could open or qualify for a membership, and ensuring that they could have the products and services they need and not have to be going to the predatory lenders or account opening services. So that's been really big for us too, is just aligning mission to mission with organizations that we're already working with.
Jack Henry's role in this is, you know, we see ourselves as really the ultimate matchmaker. And so what we're trying to do is always seek feedback from our clients and customers. So, you know, we mentioned a little bit about the strategic priorities benchmark study. So we get signals on areas that are important. We have customer advisory boards. We have regional advisory boards. So we're always trying to determine what facet of financial health needs a little bit of, you know, innovation, whether that be something we develop or through fintechs we go out and source. And we're always looking to try to find, you know, variety across those categories of saving, spending, borrowing, right, and planning and protecting. So it's variety. So we're building out an ecosystem, trying to enable and empower our credit unions to choose what supports their strategy. And I can't agree enough. I mean, both Carrie and Susan have mentioned the importance of due diligence. You do want to make sure that, because this is an emotional topic, right, and there is a lot of heart in these innovations, but when you're going to roll and deliver something out to your membership, you need to make sure that it's a solution that's going to be viable and sustainable. So the health of the organization. And then I love the fact that both Carrie and Susan mentioned the alignment to mission, right? And there has to be a cultural component as well.
What new directions might you take with your financial well-being efforts in the future?
Well, we're always looking. And so The nice thing is we like to be creative. We like to meet needs, and everything's evolving so quickly with regard to technology, with regard to society. I don't think that we can firmly say exactly what direction we're going to go in yet, other than we're going to be responsive and agile. And so we like being holistic. We want to try to make sure that we are reaching people, a broad spectrum of people, but that we're also taking a total look at everything they need and not just getting specific with the loans or the accounts, that type of thing. How else can we benefit them? But honestly, it's taking it just kind of one day at a time and seeing, what do they need now? What do our members need at this moment? But always having some eyes on that. And so currently it's just about making sure that we've got the resources available with regard to guidance, with regard to the products and services and the partnerships and that type of thing. But we always have to be looking and open to what is needed next. And in this time period, we just have to kind of evaluate that as we go and be ready to act.
Yeah, you're right, Susan. I'm sure that you did that through the pandemic or even early last year as the gas prices started to rise and then we started to see the beginning of that inflation. You know, it's just really being able to work in the moment with the team to get products and services out in the communities that you just have to respond to the market at that moment. And we're very proud to have been able to do that multiple times now. Yet at the same time, we try to plan forward. So we're 4 months into an 18-month strategic plan, and one of our major components is ensuring inclusive solutions that grow the financial well-being for our members. And so we're diving into not only looking for new products and services, but kind of getting rid of old business decisions. You know, on our products and services that we have now, how are they actually creating barriers to those members who need them the most? And so we're really reevaluating all of our current products and services to ensure that they're as inclusive as possible. And then also putting on top of that a stack of new products and services that will serve them as well. And yet still being able to respond to the market if something pops up and being able to help in that way too. We just had our annual meeting and celebrated the good work of 2022 and how we could respond to what the members needed in the moment.
Yeah, I love that. And we recently did that regarding the barriers ourselves, because there are some things you don't realize that are easy for people who are financially savvy, even with regard to applications and so forth, that are actual barriers. And so we've taken some steps recently to say, okay, let's look at this with a new set of eyes and say, is this as easy as it can be? Is this something that anyone can do and without being financially aware? And I think taking a look at some of those old processes and procedures is vital as well, because not everyone has that knowledge.
So we're doing something similar, you know, really looking within at Jack Henry. So using this as an opportunity, if you think of a single solution has a roadmap, right, to execute feature functionality enhancements in a longer term strategy, we're using the same mindset for financial health. So across the solutions that we offer, right, whether that be digital banking, lending, payments, fraud, right, and financial crime solutions, we're taking a look at, you know, what is the gap and how do we solve for that? And we might be developing or we might be sourcing a fintech partner to bridge the gap. So we're really looking at road mapping. We're also activating our culture because it's so embedded in our mission and our purpose. We're finding ways to ensure that we're delivering support at an associate level. So that's really exciting to hear a lot of similarities between, you know, the approach that you're taking. Now, I think as we evolve and look to the future of financial health solutions, you know, I think there is a move and a shift to leveraging, if not real time, near real time data, right, to really get to the core of insights within a member at a one-to-one level, right, of what's happening with their financial health. I think the goal is to move to predictive and prescriptive insights rather than just reacting to, you know, something that happened. And that's a challenge, right? That is a challenge, but we do see, you know, ways to move in that direction. I think within a digital banking context, you know, moving away from a bolt-on section or a separate tab within the experience, but really having it more embedded and seamless. So, you know, being like a Fitbit, if you will, or a GPS, something that's with you and helping you navigate, you know, on a daily level, your financial health. So that's really exciting. And I think solutions are going to become more prevalent for small businesses. I think there's going to be financial health solutions really helping to democratize how do you approach investing and building wealth when you don't have, you know, a large investable amount of money to play. So fractional shares might be an example, or digital advisory services. So I think that that's exciting. So we have our eyes open for that.
That's a really smart point. That's one of our other initiatives this year, is diving into the use of AI and ML. So artificial intelligence and machine learning with our members to go beyond that traditional credit score. The credit score is not just one part of the member. There's so much more information that we can obtain to be able to lend deeper with these folks and be able to help more. So it's really important for us. We're starting to, again, the credit score ended up starting to be a barrier for us. So how do we move on from that and gain more information and data insights real time so that we can really help the members?
What advice would you offer other credit union leaders who want to expand what they're doing to assist their members? Any best practices or do's and don'ts?
Well, assess the needs. First of all, make sure you know what the needs are so that you are addressing the correct things, obviously. Assess what you currently do and how they meet the needs. And then don't be afraid to try something new. I think oftentimes credit unions, we are so good at what we do, but sometimes we're afraid to stray from that, like, because we tend to be a little conservative, and this is the way we've done this for 50 years and so forth. And I think that being willing and able to take a look at some analytics and say, it's time to change something, or it's time to embrace maybe a new philosophy or partnership, I think is very important. Don't be terrified of the risk, because there are risks. Be smart about the risk, but don't be terrified of them. It's inherent in everything that we do. We just have to be very calculated with it. And it does have to start from the top down. You know, if the C-suite is not totally engaged in these efforts, then it just won't work, because it does take technology and it does take resources and it does take everyone being on board to move these initiatives forward.
Yeah, I would just add on, Susan, you are correct that it needs to be a strategic drive for the organization and or in your mission to ensure that you're really all in. And I would also say too, again, start with your team, get them on board, get them certified, get them skilled up so that they have the drive to want to help the members. And then when you're introducing change to product and service or technology, they understand why you're doing that and will want to do that with you.
Absolutely. And I will say, from our team standpoint, we are finding that younger generations really need that purpose-driven career. Mm-hmm. And so some of these initiatives help to provide that as well, so that we're able to retain talent and they don't feel like they have to go somewhere else to fulfill their own personal values.
So I agree, Susan and Kara, with everything that you said. And I think my top of mind thought was everything that you shared was around strategy. So I think it begins with strategy, and it has to be holistic. And I think, as you're, you know, and again, just, you know, credit unions, it's part of the cooperative principle of financial health. So credit unions, this is in the DNA, it's in the wheelhouse, that if we're talking about how to now level up, right, and really expand on the good work that's already being done, I think that holistic strategy across different lines of business, across different channels of delivery is important. I think too, as you plan and map out this holistic strategy, think about building a diverse team, right? Diverse teams lead to better business outcomes. So you'll have different perspectives, and there's a lot of diversity, you know, within your institutions. And I think if, you know, start within. If there's really something very new, very different, consider working with employees first, because there's lots of feedback that you can get in a very safe way that's nothing exposed to your membership. That might be a great way to test. And then, you know, start things small and iterate on that. And then it's easier to peel back or roll back or reset if something doesn't, you know, kind of deliver the success you intended. And just choose the right partners. You know, it's really good. And everybody gets along when things are going very well. But when there's a challenge, that's where maybe, you know, the real spirit of partnership and collaboration is revealed. So choose your partners wisely. And the good news is, this is an ecosystem. So we do not have to navigate and try and solve this complex problem alone. right? We have each other, tech providers. We've got credit unions. We've got great associations like CUNA and a financial health network. So really, we have this powerful ecosystem and our fintechs, right? Innovating to solve this complex problem.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
First of all, especially with rates so high, trying to help members save more, we're really focused on the youth CD market. So really trying to get those parents helping their kids save early so that hopefully they can break the cycle of if their family is in a financial troubled situation. Also reverse money market. So those savings accounts that have the higher interest rates at the beginning tiers to encourage just that beginning $500 savings account that we're looking for. So the higher interest rate is actually at the beginning, and then it comes down and goes back up as the tiers go on. We do a up to $1,500, we call it the whatever loan, so that they can use it for whatever they want. It's no qualifications. And though we used to offer it only a couple months of year, we switched and are now offering it year round. So easy, quick cash for our members to get and pay back. No money down mortgages to those who just don't have the cash for down payment or even closing costs, and working with our members on that. We use a lot of our CDFI grants to fund those programs. Again, talked about that Michigan account coalition with Bank On and ensuring barrier-free products and services for the unbanked markets. Spoke to Savvy Money and our PFM platforms a bit, and card swap and click switch, so that everything's really quick and easy for members to ensure that they can get to their money and access fast. Same day payroll depositing as well, so that they're not seeing their money in the warehouse for a couple of days, wondering, you know, if and when it's going to come in. Those types of things are what we're looking at. What about you, Susan?
Interesting. That reverse money market is fascinating. I love the youth CD market as well. But no, essentially what we've been trying to do, we did first-time homeowners, and that essentially those lower, we don't have a no down payment, but it's a very low down payment and a very low closing cost for them. But what we're currently working on primarily is trying to figure out ways that we can encourage the savings. And so to your point of, you know, those higher interest rates, you know, we've reduced the requirements for certificates, the minimum balances for certificates, even the way that we allow people to invest in certificates, because that is going to be key to having people reach a little bit more financial stability, is having those savings habits, having those savings vehicles, because previously they weren't really attainable. You had to have $1,000 to start a CD. Well, who has $1,000 to start a CD, you know? So little things like that. And we are in the process of getting a data analysis, our own little dashboard. So we're creating that dashboard, and that is so that we can be a little bit more proactive in seeing exactly where our members are, and we can take a look at each bucket and say, okay, what's the need here and what's the need there? And we can be a little more honed in on precise products to provide for them. But very interesting. I'll be curious to hear how that reverse money market goes, because that's unusual.
That is fascinating. And so hearing Carrie and Susan, the innovations that you're working on and thinking about, a lot are rooted in deposits, right? And that really is a top priority in the industry, is how to attract and retain deposits. Yet it's balanced by the challenge of savings, right? Savings are at an all-time low, and that's really a challenging pillar. So I love the fact that there's innovation in trying to drive incremental savings in a way to, you know, help with, you know, expenses and getting out of debt and on the path to investing for your future.
Anything else?
Well, I think I have a spirit of optimism, because I know we're still with, you know, financial, you know, health awareness month, but I think for credit unions, it's every day, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just excited at what the future holds.
And yeah, it is very exciting to see that, you know, financial well-being for all is in CUNA's strategy, that they've really pivoted to help us, as well as NCUA. And so we're gaining momentum as an industry, and that's very exciting.
Thanks for listening to the CUNA News Podcast. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio.